Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Bigfoot and Company. This is Dr. John, along with my co-host, Matthew Delf. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Well, that's great. It's starting to get warm down here in Myrtle Beach, and looking forward to the Georgia Bigfoot Conference coming up this weekend. How about you?
Oh, I'm excited. I can't wait. It's going to be a great weekend.
Well, good. Yeah, we've got a jam-packed crowd. We've got two rooms completely full. You'll be hosting one of them. I'll be hosting the other. And we are very happy to say that we've got one of our vendors here from the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and she'll be there this weekend. I would like to say hello to Lori Wade of BFRO, the Bigfoot Research Organization. Lori, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, good. Great. We're looking forward to having you there this weekend at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. And I know Matt is the one that you know Matt, and he's the one that has gotten you here on the show today. Matt, since you are an associate of Lori Wade's, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you start the conversation, and I'm going to join right in.
All righty. I've known Lori here for a little while. If you could just tell everybody basically what you do, Lori, with the BFRO and how you got started.
Well, let's see. I've been in the BFRO since about 2011. I always believed in Bigfoot before then, but, you know, kind of like when the internet started really taking off and TV shows, I was shocked to see that there were actually expeditions for Bigfoot hunting. And I joined right in, and first when I went to, I thought, I'm here with a bunch of crazy people. And that's the truth. I was in my tent. I hadn't met anybody yet. And I called home, and I told my husband, I said, we may have just made a mistake. And he said, why? And I said, because what if there are a bunch of crazy people here? And he said, well, just pack up and come home. I said, no, can't do that. I'm gonna stick it out. Well, it was the best thing I ever did because I had a blast on that expedition that was in Kentucky. And then since then, I've went on about 23 more expeditions with the BFRO, not to mention how many private ones I've been on and with other groups. And I became an investigator for the state of Tennessee in late 2013, I believe it was. And I do a lot of my expeditions in North Georgia, but I'm actually an investigator for Tennessee. But I live in Ootowah, which is just over the Georgia-Tennessee line. So I'm in North Georgia a lot more than I'm in Tennessee as far as Sasquatch hunting. And then gotcha. I just kind of took a play on it, and I make these Bigfoot, I'll call them Bigfoot hominid stuffed little animals. And I started a little business called Bigfooted Me. And I sell these things on Etsy and at several festivals and stuff around the Southeast.
Neat.
It's fun. Yeah. I get to meet a lot of people that way.
Oh, yeah. So now, have you and Matt had a chance to go on an expedition together? Because y'all are
not yet.
Y'all about 2 or 3 hours away from each other. Is that right, Matt?
Yeah, about 3 hours.
I have invited him on my expedition in May, which is in North Georgia. I've had 7 expeditions in North Georgia in the last 3 years, and I have 2 more scheduled this year. And there's one in May that I've invited Matt to come to, and I hope that he can make it.
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to schedule it in there, and I'll let you know for sure here within the next probably week. So.
No, well, I understand. We all have busy lives.
I'm definitely wanting to get out there.
Lori, I got a question for you. What is the most excitement you've ever had on one of your expeditions? What's the closest you've come, or have you seen a Bigfoot, or you know, what's been the most exciting thing that has cropped up in your expedition life?
Well, I have actually seen two. Neither one were on my lead expeditions, but the first one I saw was in Kentucky in 2016, and I have zero doubt of what I was looking at. It was on the trail behind me. It was at night, but it was a full moon, and there were three of us walking down a trail, and we decided we didn't want to walk any further. We were just tired, and we just said, let's just pull out our chairs and sit on this trail. And we decided to stop and take our chairs and point them in three different directions. And I turned around and looked in the direction we had just came from, and there was something walking down the trail. And I immediately looked behind me to make sure it wasn't one of the guys I was with. And then I turned around, I said, what is that? Who is that? And about that time it stopped and it turned to its right and it took off running down the ravine, and the trees were shaking and the acorns were falling off. And then not very long after that, there was coyotes that just went wild down in the ravine. And, you know, we had it all recorded. Of course, you know, I didn't get a picture or anything, but everything was on recorder. And I have no doubt of what I saw. And it was about 6 feet tall, but my first impression was that it was someone in a hoodie. And then the more I looked at it, it was like, that's not anybody in a hoodie. And it was only about 60 yards behind me. So that was my biggest excitement.
60 yards is not very far, Lori, is it?
No, it wasn't very far. I mean, I could go right to the tree, pinpoint which branch it was under, and there was a disturbance in the leaves. It was in the fall of the year. So there was a disturbance in the leaves, but it was not a person. It was not a bear. I have no doubt of what I was seeing. I saw was in April of 2018, and it was in Virginia. And I was on a trail with several investigators and some other people, and three investigators actually saw it and saw it from a different angle. We were about maybe 100 yards apart, all of us together, and we saw it from a different angle, and we came together, and all of us were animated and excited, and it was like, did you see that? Did you? You know, we didn't push anybody to say what they saw, but we saw it all from a different angle. And actually, Rick Rellis was one of the people who saw it with me. And it was on a hillside. And again, that was probably about 60 yards away. I saw it move from right to left behind a tree. When they saw it, it moved from left to right and was going in like a full running motion. So those are the two most exciting things, but I've been very fortunate. I tend to be in areas that get a lot of activity. You know, I can't say they're all Bigfoot, but I can tell you that it sure does get you excited when you're hearing whoops and hollers and wood knocks and seeing tree structures. It's fun.
Yeah, now Rick comes to conferences and he talks a lot about those tree structures. He does.
He does. He's got a little book on it, and I've been out with him before when we're just looking for structures, and you know, the ones that he finds, they really are some type of structure that is not man-made. You know, when it's weaved in and out, and Rick can tell you so much about that. He's real well educated in that.
I got a question, Lori.
Yeah.
You said that the coyotes were going off. I've heard a lot of theories that Bigfoot has coyotes for pets and like lookout, stuff like that. And at first I kind of blew it off. I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know. But since I've been researching for 20-plus years now, I've noticed that baboons would steal puppies, like feral dogs and stuff and coyotes, and they would raise them up as a pet. And, I mean, there's actual proof of it. There's videos, you know. They've got them raised. They're sleeping with these dogs and coyotes and stuff that they just steal them out of a den. as pups and to raise them up like a pet. Do you? What's your theory on that with Bigfoot? What do you think? You think it's nonsense?
I'm going to tell you, I wouldn't be surprised, and I'll tell you something that happened to me on one of my expeditions. A lady came on one of my expeditions, and I did not know beforehand, but after we got to the expedition, she told me that she was a psychic. And, of course, you know, people mints and wints at that, and they don't want to believe anything. And I just said, look, just don't be telling other people that, because, you know, we already get made fun of. So just, you know, keep that to yourself. Well, we were on a trail one night, and I promise you this is the truth. She looked at me and she said, there's a Bigfoot over the top of the hill right there. He's one of the watchers. You know, I'm like, really? She said, yeah, he's with his friend, the coyote. And I'm like, are you serious? And she said, I'm serious. She said, he travels everywhere with his coyote friend. So that being said, whether you believe in psychic ability or not, that was strange to me that she said that. And then how often are you out researching just like I am? And it always seems that there's coyotes near whenever something's happening. You know, there's always, you'll hear the coyotes go off and you'll hear a wood knock or you'll hear a howl. And sometimes you'll even hear a howl mixed in with the coyotes that is just different. So
Lori,
real quick,
I got to ask you, when you went over the hill, what did you see?
We did not go over the hill. She continued to tell me that she, you know, that she didn't feel like we were wanted in that area. So, you know, I was kind of playing 20 questions with her because I wanted to know anything she could tell me. But we never went over the hill. I will tell you there was an uneasy feeling in that area that we were at, but I had that prior to going there as well. We were pretty far back in the woods, and I just didn't have a good feeling about being there. But we never went over the hill. I just decided that, you know, I had five people with me, and I wasn't going to put anybody in danger if she felt like it was not a good place to be, and I already had an uneasy feeling. So I didn't check it out. I mean, I probably should kick myself for not checking it out, but I didn't do it.
You know, I've got a story about not checking something out, and I actually did. I was in Clayton, Georgia, where we are having the Bigfoot conference, and I was at the mm-hmm. library talking with the head librarian and one of her folks as we were making some plans for the Sunday morning event for Matt's trip into the woods, and we were talking about the folks at Kelly Research Technologies. They do some pretty crazy advanced technology over there, and I had been told about it, and I knew exactly where they were. And I said, have they ever come here? Yes, they have, but we really want to talk to them about all the technology that they do. It seems almost like psychic things that they do. I said, yeah, it is. And then I just got this feeling. I said, I'm going to go see them. It is before 5 o'clock today. And if I don't go see them right now, I'll never go see them. And I jumped up, said my goodbyes, left, drove 20 minutes. I was at the doorstep of their building. There was a car in front of it, and I knocked on the door, and lo and behold, I met them. And they just bought tickets to the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. So I decided.
That's great.
So what happened was I said, oh, no, I'm not going to do it. And then the voice just said, yes, you are. You are missing a terribly good opportunity to go meet nice people. And don't get worried. Someone said, well, why don't you make a phone call? I said, that's the last thing you need to do when you want to go meet somebody. Okay, can I come
absolutely.
Meet you? No, absolutely not. So I know you're an experienced one, but I tell you what, I agree with you. Even if you have an uneasy feeling, well, all they can do is throw a rock at you.
That's right. I've never been in the woods and felt threatened. Any time that I felt like there was Bigfoot around, and some of my fellow co-investigators and stuff, they always tell me, they're like, you're a Bigfoot magnet. And I'm like, well, I don't know if that's true, but I've never been frightened to where I just thought I want to leave. And I just don't, I have not gotten that from them. I don't think I ever will.
Wow.
I mean, I
had the same experience.
You've been frightened before, Matthew?
Oh, gosh, I've been chased out of the woods.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why, but I just don't feel, that that fear of them now. And maybe they don't feel that fear from me. Who knows? You know, I personally don't think that they're as frightened of a woman, even if it was a woman toting a gun, as they would be of a man.
Right. Right. I was deer hunting, and total skeptic, didn't even believe in Bigfoot. And this thing did not want me there. I was trying to figure out what in the world I was looking at, and it was very aggressive, snapping trees and threw a huge stick towards my head.
You must have been close to his family.
I wish I had that sit down and have key Bigfoot time with, like some of these people have had, but mine wasn't like that. Wasn't like that at all.
Well, again, if you listen to the stories, though, if you listen to a lot of people talking about Bigfoot experiences, the ones that have been ran out of the woods are men. You don't hear a lot of women that got chased out of the woods. See, I think there's something to that.
Well, that's true. I mean, if you look back through history, there's reports, especially from the Indians and stuff, where they would, Bigfoot would come down and they'd steal their women. I think a lot of it, you know, I think they're attracted to human females.
Yeah, I think they're not attracted to me because they know I talk too much, and they would just really just say, no, let's just leave her alone.
No,
we're going to pass on her.
They would have to love the fact that she talks a lot, and they wouldn't have to.
That could be true. Yeah, they'd just be like, no, we've heard that one. She just never shuts up.
They're all sitting around their little group there, and she's just talking away, and see one stretching his head like,
Well, see, that's a different theory that I have about going into the woods, too. I don't go into the woods and being all stealthy quiet. I don't do that. I go into the woods, I'm singing, I'm laughing, I'm cutting up. Now, I will tell people to be quiet if I hear something or if they hear something, but otherwise, we're just having a good time. We are not on that hunter's mode where you're trying to be really quiet and creep up on something, because you're not going to creep up on one anyway. You know, they know you're in the woods, but, you know, you're going out there and you're laughing and having a good time. I think it just piques their curiosity.
That's a good point, because, like, whenever I was growing up and we didn't know it was Bigfoot, but after I'd actually seen the visual of it, I looked back and I know now for sure it was. But as we were kids growing up and we were out in the woods and stuff, and there would be something around and it would make that scream with that growl in it, but it wasn't a threatening at the time. And it was always, we would be out playing in the woods, and that's when it was around. It's like it attracted it. You know, they want to see what was going on.
I think they're curious, I'll say creatures. I think they're curious beings. And I think when you're laughing and kind of, why do you think people see them when they're in a camp and they're all laughing and having a good time and somebody sees something, you know, in the woodline? It's because they're wanting to know what's going on. They're wanting to see what we're doing.
Well, yeah. I mean, our buddy,
there are cases of hunters. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say our buddy Mark Johnston, he and two of his friends, in fact, this is going to be in the upcoming new edition of Bigfoot Explorers that's going to be coming out this weekend. And his story goes something like, well, he and two of his friends went up on top of a mountain, and they had some good battery power, and they did some strobe lights, and they did some LEDs. And I think they've done that twice, and the exact two times that they did it, They were messing around with Bigfoot the next day. Bigfoot Bigfoot sees something interesting or unusual, Bigfoot tends to want to know what it is.
Yeah, I think that's.
I truly believe that.
Standard good That's a standard good practice and curiosity. I mean, Lori, if you hear a knock somewhere in the back of your house or apartment or wherever you live, you're probably going to go look to see what it is, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Or maybe not.
Absolutely.
It kind of depends on how scary it is. Yeah. I don't think they're too scared of
it. No, I'm usually a check it out and ask later, you know, type person.
Uh-huh. And I'm sure Matt's that way,
yeah.
too. I mean, so I think it's easy to establish that Bigfoot has some good innate curiosity. And, I mean, they know their – I mean, look, we're in their home. These woods are their home. So, I mean, we're in them, and they know something unusual or strange, and they won't check it out. And I've heard that from a lot of people.
Well,
so, yeah.
And they've been in them a lot longer than we have. Yeah, that's been their home a lot longer than we've been in those woods.
Now that I always take a scientific approach whenever I was doing it. I never believed in mind speak, psychic ability, stuff like that at the time as I first started. Because, and, you know, I grew up trapping, hunting, stuff like that whenever I was a kid. And as I got older, I just more into hunting and stuff and just an outdoorsman in general. And after I had my first encounter, I took a scientific approach just like if I was hunting a regular animal. But as I've gotten into it more years, there's more to it, I think, than just a typical animal. I think that they've got, you hear all these people, you know, a lot of people discredit the, you got what they call the woo side and the people where it's the flesh and blood. And I take scientific approach. I know it's a flesh and blood animal, but as part of, as you do it more, you got an open mind because, first off, you're looking for something that everybody's telling you doesn't exist, but you know it does. But so you got to have an open mind. But and then as you experience more and more years of doing this research, you come across stuff that you can't explain scientifically. What are your thoughts on some of that?
I couldn't agree with you more. I started out with an absolute, it's a flesh and blood ape. And just like you, you come across so many things that you can't explain. And I always try to take the notion that I listen to everything anybody tells me. And I try to take, even if I don't believe their story, you know, for whatever reason, I'll try to take whatever they said and I'll try to squish it in my brain somewhere and say, okay, put that in the back file. And then if I continue to hear something like that, you know, it's like, well, wait a minute. This is like the third or fourth time I've heard that. And you know, the woo is as far as the BFRO goes, the woo is absolutely a no-no. Absolutely have to have that open mind that you're talking about, and you have to be able to listen because – once again, until it's there's not a virtue of proof that it is. There's a virtue of proof that it's not. So we can't prove that there's not any woo or paranormal or anything not involved. And until we do, we just have to keep our mind open and say, okay, let's just wait and see. Listen to what you hear, what you know. I know that I've had things happen in the woods that I can't explain. I've had orbs in front of me that I do not know what they were. I've had, you know, one minute you see something and the next minute you don't. Well, why? Why do you only see one track? A lot of times you'll find a Bigfoot track and you'll see one or two and then you don't see any more. Why? I don't know. But I'm not willing to rule anything out until I can prove that it's absolutely, you know, not the case.
Well, I'm going to jump in. I'm going to say two things. Number one, the Neil deGrasse Tyson has done more to damage science than anybody else, and I'd love for Neil to call me about it. We all know who he is, and all he says is if it's not the scientific method, I don't want anything to do with it. Well, he's wrong, and I'll be glad to debate him. Second of all, I just spoke with someone this morning. They just had a whole bunch of psychics up at the University of Virginia Top 10 Medical School. They're getting ready to come out with a paper about how their brains work to produce psychokinesis. And this is in your face, Neil. And this is in everybody's face. Jen Cruz, I think, of the She Squatchers, has, you see, it's like every day I talk to somebody that has more and more evidence that this thing called woo is just a camouflage of fear, or people just don't want to mess with it. Jen Cruz says the
exactly.
best thing. We have over 2 billion pieces of information that bombard us every second, and we can only comprehend and understand about 25,000. And there's these other things we don't normally do. Those that are considered psychic are ones that can process and understand that, and a lot of us can't. And I think this University of Virginia Medical School article is going to rock a lot of people, and it's going to embarrass them, because it's like the article that came out, and it was just so comical. It made me laugh. It said, scientists are beginning to think UFOs are real. Well, they've had their heads under a rock for 7,000 years. Yes, scientists have made great discoveries. But, you know, the fact is, UFOs have been around longer than we have. And I hardly can find someone that hasn't seen one now or hasn't had an experience. And I honestly, just everybody I talk to, about 3/4 of the people I talk to, either believe in Bigfoot and or have had an experience. So I think
right.
I think the paradigm is going to change. And everybody needs, it's not an open mind, they need to listen to the facts that are starting to come out. Because as we have better and better equipment to measure brain reaction and brain response, we're going to find out a lot of this stuff is very real. Well, they're finding it out right now. It's real and it's natural. So lumping it under some name and laughing at it, that's archaic and that's unscientific. That's what I'll say. And I'd be glad.
That's awesome. I can't wait to read that report myself.
I'd be delighted to debate Neil deGrasse Tyson. I got the same credentials that he does. And he just won't. He just wants to be I've lost my mind. He wants to be a skeptic just because he makes a lot of money being a skeptic. That's all it is. You know, and I'd tell him that to his face. He makes so much money being a skeptic, why would he want to change his income stream? So there, I'll be quiet now, Lori. I can't wait. As soon as that article's out, Lori, Matt, I'm going to have that article all over the world. And I'll be talking. I spoke with one of the participants this morning, so I'll know exactly when it comes out. I had a 90-minute conversation and found out some of the results, and they are staggering. And there are some more results. Scripps Institute is getting ready to do a similar study. Scripps, as in, that has the Scripps Institute for Oceanography. Those folks don't mess around. So I got the word. The word is on the real street that this stuff's coming out. And it's just everybody's going to be floored. And it's like not accepting Melba Ketchum's paper as real. Because there are other folks who got the same result, and they can't get their papers published either. So, I mean, traditional science doesn't want to mess with this. Okay. All right. You can now take a key and lock me up. I've said my piece. Okay. Matt, are you going to dump me? Are you going to dump me for getting on my soapbox?
No. That's good information.
You were sitting around not saying anything. I was getting scared.
We were just listening.
I'm sorry. Every once in a while, Lori, I think you'll agree with, I don't know you, but you seem like the type, every once in a while, it's okay to get wound up, isn't it, for a good cause?
Absolutely. It's okay to be passionate about something. You know, and that's why so many people are afraid to get passionate about Bigfooting, let's say. You know, I'm like, who am I hurting? I tell people that all the time, people who make fun of me. I'm like, am I hurting you? And they're like, no. And I'm like, am I hurting anyone? No, but you sound crazy. I'm like, to whom? Who do I sound crazy to? I don't sound crazy to myself.
Well, so. I'm so glad that Galileo and Copernicus decided to sound crazy. I'm proud of them.
That's right. You know, we follow your own gut. You know, we don't all want to be followers of everything. You want to learn and listen and learn facts for yourself. I don't ask anybody to believe anything that I've seen or anything that I tell them. Learn it for yourself.
Exactly.
Figure it out.
That's my whole research. I don't care if anybody believes me or not. It's personal for me. I know for a fact what I've seen, and I know certain things are fact because I've seen it. And whether anybody believes me or not, I could care less.
Right. I mean, I don't care.
And yeah,
I love it. I knew Matt was going to get on his soapbox right after I did. I love it, Matt.
Well, I mean, after you get into, say, okay, but the problem with the whole Bigfoot thing, people label you as crazy, is because the government has put in their 2 cents to, as part of their cover-up of this whole situation, and they've already admitted Bigfoot exists in 1975 with the Army Corps of Engineers, whenever they put that out there, that Bigfoot was a species, and they train military, I know military people that, and part of their training is animals to stay away from them, or a Bigfoot in their, you know, I'd like to see the protocol if they come across the Bigfoot. But they train society. They want us to think Bigfoot is fake and false. That's part of the cover-up. And so just the people in general that don't think for themselves, they're being fed all this stuff that it's fake. And then, and where we get the ridicule from is because the government will put these ridiculous people on TV to make a mockery of it, so everybody will laugh and not believe it. And it's smart of them because they're making a mockery of it, so everybody else will that follows along with whatever people say, not true leaders that don't think for themselves. And anytime there's a Bigfoot sighting or anything, if it is on the news, who do they always put on the TV? They always put that guy that comes out of the woods once in a month and seems like he's crazy. And they're like, you know, they put Bubba on there to talk about this Bigfoot. You know, he's like, you know, Bigfoot was down there and he was taking a bath and he come out and was hanging out with me out here with the dogs. And, you know, they do it to make a mockery. Everybody will laugh at you whenever, you know, if you even talk about it. It's kind of a funny story. I mean, I try to keep my normal life separate. And the whole Bigfoot thing, but it spills over. You can't do that. I don't know that we have a normal life anymore.
Okay.
Thank you, Lori. I could hear you and I laughing at Matt. Matt, you don't have a normal life. This Bigfoot is your normal life.
Well, that's
exactly.
True.
I love you, Matt.
But in society,
exactly.
Okay,
once you start on this path of genuine Bigfoot research, you don't have a normal life anymore.
No.
You know, my kids and my husband, they don't really believe, and they make fun of me, and, you know, that's fine. But, I tell them the same thing. I'm like, I'm not hurting you. My husband thinks that I'm in a 5-year midlife crisis. And I'm like, I'm not. But, I mean, sometimes we will go somewhere for one of his corporate events, and he'll say, please, please don't bring up Bigfoot. And I'll just laugh at him. I'm like, okay, I won't. Never fails. Somebody will come up to me and ask me about Bigfoot or ask me about, hey, I want to tell you something. And he just rolls his eyes up. And I'm like, I didn't bring it up. They did. But, you know, nobody wants to believe. But I don't care if you're like Matt. I don't care if they believe me or not. I'm not harming anyone.
I don't care if anybody believes me. I'm at my job. I'm an operations supervisor, and I've been a boss for almost 20 years now. It's been over 20 years now. Actually, I didn't want to admit it that I'm that old, but it's been that long. But, you know, I've been in meetings, and somebody will mention, you know, here we're corporate, where everybody's sitting around there, and it's a pretty huge company I work for, and they're like, let me get this straight. You monster hunt on the weekend? And, you know, and I'm like, that's a good way to put it. You know, and then everybody's kind of like looking at me, and it's where society has put this label or tag on you, and you know, and then a target on your back.
Well,
yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Lori, don't we have more fun than the stiffs do business?
I've never been out when I haven't had fun. I have the best time, and I've met lifelong friends doing this. And you know, after my, like I said, that first expedition I went on, and I was hooked. And I came home and I told my husband, I said, there were doctors there and lawyers and all these things. He said, really? And I'm like, absolutely. I said, I expected it to be a bunch of redneck people like myself. But I said, it's not. There were a bunch of intellects there. And he just still thinks it's funny. But, you know, the funny thing about Bigfoot or whatever, before I ever went on my first expedition, and I told my mother at the time, I said, Mother, I'm going to go on this thing camping with people. And she's like, oh, you can't go with people you don't know. And I said, it'll be fine. And she said, I'm not surprised you're doing this. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, don't you remember? And I'm like, don't I remember what? Tell me. And she said, you used to pray, please God, don't let the Bigfoots come and get me. She said, every night by your bed, you would pray that. I said, Mother, what happened that I don't remember? You know, please tell me. And she said, I don't know. She said, you just prayed that for like 2 or 3 years. Every day you would pray that. So I don't know if I have some recessed memory or what, but I can't. I vaguely remember after she said that, I remember doing it. But I don't know why. So maybe I was destined. I was destined to always be in Bigfoot research.
That is an awesome point. That is an awesome point. The people that are usually
involved. We're going to have a great time hanging out, Lori. I can tell that.
I'm a fun person sometimes.
Heck yeah.
I'm a fun person that likes to cook and I like to talk. So, hey, what better things could there be?
But have you noticed, though, it gives you, once you get into the Bigfoot, something happens or you encounter something like that. Like, for example, my encounter. And it has changed my life forever. And it's, you've got, you know, it's your fate that you have to encounter that to get to your destination.
Absolutely.
You know, something like that or something happens to get you to where you're supposed to be. And everybody that does this stuff has had some sort of, you know, life-changing or something that puts you, you know, your fate, it was supposed to happen so you can get to your destination point. And
I'm a firm believer in all things for a reason.
Exactly. And that was a great point, though, that you made, you know, that you used to pray when you were a little kid, you know, and that goes into thinking, you know, with people that I've met, these people and this stuff that, you know, they believe reincarnation, maybe you've experienced from your past life, all kinds of crazy stuff. And you have to keep an open mind on all this. And to me, it's just awesome that, you know, like I said, I started out as it was flesh and blood animal, still believe it's flesh and blood animal, but I'm to the point now of, like, you know, it's more to it than what we know. And a lot of the woo and people think, well, it can do this and it can do that, and everybody, I don't know why all these people are so against saying a Bigfoot can't do that, it can't do this, but you got like dolphins, you got these other animals that do stuff like that, like they use sonar, you know, they a fox, it's got a homing, like a, it can detect it, use the Earth's magnetism to draw itself to where a mouse is so many feet, and they can detect how far, how many feet under the snow a mouse is from just using Earth's gravity. I mean, you know, they've got like a sonar that they can, these animals have these special abilities, and people don't even take that into effect. You know, this Sasquatch, what kind of abilities might they have? Because a fox and a bat and dolphins and stuff use all this stuff that's, you know, that we can't, then. And there's some people that I believe can, that, like, you know, the impasse to people because everything is energy. Everything is energy. And some people are more, I guess you could say, they're more...
in tune with it.
Exactly, exactly. They're more sensitive to it. And, you know, what makes you think a Bigfoot's not like that? I guarantee it. That's what a lot of this stuff is coming from, stuff that they do.
Matthew, have you ever had infrasound when you were out in the woods? Have you ever been zapped, so to speak?
No, I've never been zapped. I've heard lots of cases of it.
I have been, and I hope I'm never I would say that was probably the most frightening. I take that back when I said I've never been frightened. I was frightened.
Hey, Lori, please,
at that point.
Please explain that, because not everybody listening in is going to know what that is. Can you explain it and then tell us a little bit about your experience? Do you mind doing that?
No, I don't mind at all. And Matthew,
great.
You know, please join in if I'm not saying what it is correctly. Infrasound, large mammals such as elephants and lions can do this, and they can. It's a high-pitched sound that they, or a low-tone sound that they can project, and it partially paralyzes their prey. Now, I believe Bigfoots do it not necessarily to do it for their prey, but what happens is that you're just, you know, you're paralyzed or you're scared. Or I've known some big men to go down on their knees and be sick. It kind of depends on how much we con the term zap, how much they zap you with. Mine happened in Wisconsin, and I was rowing on a canoe, checking out a Bigfoot sighting. I was rowing on a canoe, and we kept hearing something on the shoreline, and we came up into the wrong slough. This was a lake that, you know, there's no motorized boats, there's no houses, so it's just an overgrown pond, in my opinion. And we came up into the wrong slough, and I said, this is not where we're supposed to be. We need to go to the next slough to go up the embankment to find our truck. Well, we kept hearing something, and we pull up on the shore. I get out, and as soon as I get out and I'm going to pull the canoe up for the guy that's in the back, I hear something, and I look at him. I'm like, Mike, did you hear that? And he said, no, all I heard was the water. What did you hear? I said, listen. And he stepped into the water, and he was like standing in the water, and I was standing on the shore, and we heard a large thump. Like, and to me, it sounded like somebody jumping out of a tree and landing on the ground. And I said, Mike, well, was that's not a bear, is it? And he said, no. And I said, was it a deer stomp? And he said, no. And Mike's a big hunter. He goes all over North America hunting all sorts of animals. So I was, you know, pretty confident with what he was saying. Well, I stood up and I walked a step toward the woods, and we were just like on a little pig trail. I mean, it was just a little trail that you could come down from a parking area straight down to this little lake, and we had to carry the canoe. So I stepped one step toward the woods, and all of a sudden, I just froze. I couldn't breathe. I started hyperventilating. I felt nauseous, crying. I'm just, tears are rolling down my face. Now, Mike has been with me in the woods more times than you can even count. And he looks at me. He's like, Lori, what's wrong? And he's shaking me. I can't even talk to him. He's like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And then he said the hairs on the back of his neck stood up. And he's like, Lori, are you okay? Are you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm not okay. He's like, can you walk? I said, no, I can't walk. And so he starts trying to communicate with them, doing things like the Sierra sounds. Okay, so he starts and starts saying words that he thinks are Bigfoot words, you know, based on some other books and stuff that we've read. And At one point, he said, Lori, he said, we'll leave the canoe. Just grab my hand. We're going to walk straight up this trail. And I said, Mike, we'll never make it up the trail. He said, what do you mean? I said, we will never make it back to the car. So it took about 20 minutes to subside. But once it started subsiding, we heard plain as day. We had had a light up on the truck, and the light was off. But plain as day, we heard a whoop, which is the only whoop he's ever heard in 10 years of Bigfoot research. We heard a whoop, and then we heard footsteps from right beside me going straight up the hill. And we didn't have any lights or anything, so we couldn't shine a light to see what it was. But after it subsided, we picked up the canoe, put it in the truck, and I got in the truck. And, you know, I was really nervous and scared. I didn't want to get back out of the truck again. And then the next day, we came back to the area to look around, and we saw some stick structures about 100 yards on the other side of the hill in a ravine. So what my feeling was, and I can't tell you this is what it really was because I didn't see it, but my feeling was is that there was a juvenile down by the water, and I think it had been kind of wandering around the water's edge following us because we were talking and canoeing, and there was nobody else out there. It was midnight. And I think the adult zapped me because I was too close to it. To its baby. And I think that because Mike was on the other side of me, and I think that when it whooped, it was pretty much saying, you know, get your butt back home, get up here. And then that's when it subsided. And I will honestly tell you that was the scariest feeling I've ever had in my life about anything. And I hope to never feel that again, because it was more than fear. It was a deep-seated dread, just absolutely, like I said, I couldn't breathe. And, you know, I'm crying in the middle of the woods, and I'm usually the one that's taking charge and being the first one and saying, follow me. And I definitely did not want to be anyone following me. I just wanted to get my butt to the truck and be out of there. So that was my harrowing experience. And, you know, people can look up the word infrasound and see exactly what it means. But if elephants can do it, if lions can do it, why couldn't a Bigfoot do it?
Exactly. Yep.
I have no short stories, guys. I tend to be a talker. Did you notice?
That's good. That's good. That's really good. That's what we want. We want to hear.
I mean, I know. Lori, what you're really doing is you're doing self-defense for Matt, because I'll get on my soapbox permanently. So you're just a great guest. You keep me quiet, right, Matt?
No. Hear you too, Dr. John. We'd like to hear your. Get on your soapbox. I mean, you got
like
a lot of
good. I like to hear everybody's stories.
Exactly. I mean,
but
that's why.
I want to hear everybody's information. I mean, I want to take that information and file it away. And when I could use it, I want to say, oh, yeah, I listened to Dr. John, and he said this. I want to look that up. I want to do this. I mean.
Yeah, that's what I like
about
him.
Any good researcher listens to everything.
Exactly. Now, whenever I go out in the woods and I'm in doing research, I take it, I'm like you talking about with people be quiet and stuff. I'm quiet. I take it like I'm a, you know, I guess it's where my hunting background. But there I'm taking everything in, because I take it as like a crime scene. I'm investigating a crime scene. Every time I step into the woods, I'm looking around, I'm taking it up like I'm investigating a crime scene. And that's my approach. It might be boring to some people because they go out with me and they're like, you know, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm listening, you know, and I'm everything in my surroundings, you know. And then usually some people don't even know, but, you know, I'll have a crow. A crow will warn every animal that there's man in the woods. And
absolutely,
they give you
it will.
as soon as you get out there, if there's one around or whatever, then they're gonna do their little circle thing, and they're gonna warn the whole wilderness. So you know, you can pretty much, you know, you're already giving away. But I investigated the crime scene. But yeah, like with like John talks about, you know, with the he'll get on there and he'll start talking about with the science and stuff like that, and he gets on a soapbox, and I mean, it's good because we'd like to hear all that stuff, good information. So
I mean, if I was one or two people, I might be quiet, but typically I'm out having fun, and you know, from the moment I step out of the car, we have a recorder on, and I can't tell you how many times we've came back and have heard stuff over our conversation. It's like, hey, look, there was a wood knock. We didn't even hear that, you know. But we have a recorder on, so it records every bit of our conversation. Sometimes we have to bleep that out. It's like, oh, we should have talked about that. I forgot. But, you know, you always want to have it recorded so that you can go back and listen to it and see what else, you know, what else. And I'm a big fan of LDRs. I'm a big fan of long-duration recorders. Get them out to an area and, you know, go back and get them a month later. If you can get to an area where, you know, you don't have a lot of people tromping around.
Right, that's the big key. But there's so much wilderness, like, oh my gosh, this area that I'm around now, all these sightings and stuff, it's like a needle in a haystack. This wilderness is thick, and there's so much of it. People don't realize, you know, you could be out there every day for 10, 15 years and not come across anything because it's so thick and there's so much, you know, so much area. That,
don't you,
you know,
just love the mountain laurel? Do you have a lot of mountain laurel where you're at?
Yes, we do. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, your mountain laurel could be beside you on the trail and you literally can't see behind the mountain laurel.
Exactly.
I mean, you could have a Bigfoot standing there. You would not know it was there. And another thing that people don't realize is that, you know, you don't have to trek 5 miles into the woods to find Bigfoot signs. Sometimes you can be 200 yards into the woods and find something. You just got to know what you're looking for and, you know, and be cognizant of the area around you.
It's exactly right. It's like you always hear these hunters that said, I've hunted for 30 years and I've never come across a Bigfoot. And I said, you know what, though? I said, I guarantee it. If you're telling the truth, you've been in the woods for that long, you've come across something you couldn't explain. I said, but your mind don't think of a Bigfoot if you don't believe in Bigfoot. You don't look for Bigfoot. Because that was me whenever I had all these signs and didn't know about it until I actually seen it. And I look back now and I'm like, so that's why. Because, I mean, we're talking huge grass beds, and these things stunk so bad. And there weren't any bear in the area. I know a bear. And
you didn't know what it was?
No. But I assumed that it was some deer would group together or something because, you know, Bigfoot wasn't even a possibility. You know, you never even think that way because it's programmed into your mind, your brain, that it doesn't exist. And I would find grass beds, and, I mean, it would make me wonder, you know, what in the world, that's a lot of deer or something, but it stinks. You know, I've never smelled a deer like this, and it was a nasty smell. And anytime it was around, then it had an odor. The one that I encountered then had a distinct odor. If it was around, you knew it because you could smell it before it got there. And a lot of people, I've heard different people say, oh, they, you know, the smell. I know for a fact that this thing stunk. And, of course, I take that in my research because I know for a fact that it stunk because I've seen it and smelled it. And anytime it come near, there was a smell. And I would find other stuff, too, like on top of the barbed wire fence. I would find such long hair, and I had no clue what it come off of because I was like, that's odd, you know, and it was on the top of the barbed wire fence. The one down on below or in the middle of it where, like, a coyote would cross over, the coyote stuff like that crossed under it. They never go up to the top of the barbed wire fence. They will cut under it think if a deer jumps it, this was too long a hair and it wasn't deer hair, but I never knew what it was. I just thought, huh, that's awful strange. I wonder what that's from, you know. There weren't any cows or anything like that out there in this area. It hadn't been for the whole entire time that we lived in that area. And now I look back and I wish I'd known then what I know now, but I never even thought.
Oh, sure.
It doesn't even pop into your head, you know. You don't think about it. So a lot of these people, if their brain is programmed not to be open to see anything and everything, they're not going to. They're just looking for evidence.
You say those hunters said that they've been hunting for 30 years and haven't ever seen anything Bigfoot. I guarantee those Bigfoot saw them. If there were Bigfoots in that area, I guarantee they saw them. They knew they were out there.
Exactly. And I would tell them, I'd say, but you know what? And this is what always gets them. This is how I can tell if they've ever been out in the woods or not. A lot of them say, oh, well, I've been hunting. But a lot of them maybe went hunting like once every couple of years or something with their dad or their brother or somebody. You know, they weren't true woodsmen. And this is how you can really tell if they actually are true woodsmen or not. You can look at them and you tell them, you go, hey, I guarantee you've experienced something that you couldn't explain, though. And they'll sit there and think, and the ones that actually do spend time in the woods will look at you and go, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I have, you know, this is happening.
Yeah.
But, and I tell them, hey, it's because, you know, now that you're thinking about it, and they're like, yeah, now that you're mentioned it, you know, I've come across this and that and didn't know what it was, but, you know, they didn't think Bigfoot because they weren't or brought up, programmed to not believe in Bigfoot. So you don't even think about that.
Matthew, in your area, this is just a curiosity question for me. In your area, what color Bigfoots are most reported?
I've heard, like right here where I'm at now, dark figures. There's a couple not too far from me, and they call it the Mulberry Gap Monster, and they've been reported of like one or two of them being white. But mostly it's a dark brown or a black.
And see, the reports I'm getting right now are blonde, like a dirty blonde, and the reddish color, the reddish caramel color. And, you know, I don't think it necessarily has to do with an area. I think it's just like people, though. You know, we have kids with different color hair. Why can't Bigfoots have different color hair, too?
Well, exactly. It's like a black bear. A black bear will have cinnamon brown color hair, too. They're not exactly, some just aren't black. They've got some brown, and they've got some of that color hair also. But with me, what's hard for me is I'm colorblind. So when I'm out in the woods, I mean, I can tell if something's dark or if it's light, but I can't tell the different shade. I can't tell the different shade. That's what
my husband's colorblind, and I always tell him if I get mad at him that I'm gonna mix up his clothes and he won't know what's what. Because that's how I roll.
Now,
well,
my whole thing
it is.
I, what makes me, okay, we're talking about DNA and all this stuff. Now, a lot of people report this eye shine, and I've been doing some research on eye shine. And every animal has eye shine in general, except for like squirrels, I believe kangaroos, pigs don't, humans don't, and almost most of your primates, there's only a couple rare occasions, but most primates don't have eye shine either. So it's got my head, you know, trying to think, well, what does this make up the DNA if primate and humans, most primates and all humans don't have eye shine. What is this DNA structure? Because I'm sure you, have you ever seen eye shine? Or you, I know you've heard the eye shine.
I've actually seen it before and don't know what it was. You know, I don't know. I don't know that it was a Bigfoot. I don't know if it was a deer. I don't know what it was. But I've seen it in several places, and I've seen anything from, you know, a gold color to what a lot of people say is a light blue color. There's Dr. Tom Bruns here in Chattanooga has an excellent presentation. I'm going to try to get that for you sometime on how the eye works. And it's a really good presentation on eyeshine. Remind me, and I'll try to see if I can get that from him.
Okay. A lot of
I'd like to get a copy of that, Lori. Yeah.
I mean, it's really he's a doctor here, and he just has a really good presentation of it.
Well, see, your eye shine, your different colors is a lot of your a lot of the different stuff that's in your body. You know, like the different animals and stuff like that, they'll have a different eye shine because of their diet, so their body is rich in this nutrients and so on, and so that explains a lot of the different colors. You know, if you've got this animal that eats certain, you know, most of its body is made up of these type of minerals and nutrients and vitamins, you know, they're going to project this type of color of eye shine. So that's definitely got me, I think a lot of that has got something, you know, it can tell us a lot about them if we can break it down.
Yeah, one day we're going to know a lot of information. Excuse me, my coughing's got to me. One day we're going to be surprised at everything we find out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they keep it covered up because, you know, they're going to have to explain a lot of stuff if they actually expose it. And a lot of people are like, well, why do they keep it covered up? You know, where are the bones? You know, they've found bones. They found skeletons, but it's always covered up. I don't care what kind of evidence you get. If they don't want it out there, it's not going to be out there. They will shut it down real quick, and they are bigger than us. They know how to do it. I mean, they will, if you have to disappear, you will disappear before that gets out, you know. They will not, if they don't want it out, it's not going to get out. They don't want people to know.
I agree with that.
They're not going to know. Now, you're in the BFRO, and I know that they've got a lot of guidelines and stuff that you've got to follow and do their research and stuff. Now, you guys, being a BFRO member, you get access to more locations and sighting reports than the general public.
As an investigator, I have access to the largest database. I mean, it's a large database just for the public, but there are so many reports that aren't on there, and they're backlogged. They're backlogged on getting them on there. But then maybe there's just some that never got investigated, or maybe there's some that it's like, you know, we're not going to put this one out there. We're going to save this one. But there's so many reports of things. And so, I mean, like, you know, actually North Georgia doesn't have a ton of reports on it on the actual website, but the backlog and the things that are not out there, and some of them people will absolutely say, even if you change my mind, I do not want that out in public. Don't change my name. Don't worry about it. Don't put it out there. And how many times do we get called? And by the time you get back to that person, they've either changed their story or they've decided they don't want to tell you anymore. Because in the South, and I love the South, I'm from the South, but in the South, it's the good old boys network tell you because they don't want to be ridiculed.
Exactly. You already get ridiculed if you're from the South, a lot of us. You know,
We
talk.
Absolutely.
Or just a bunch of hillbillies.
I mean, if you're accident bad enough that you get ridiculed about, I mean, people just make fun of you. And yeah. I will say, I'm originally from Alabama, so I already get made fun of.
That's where my sister lives. That she was there at the Georgia conference there with us, and
right.
It was my niece and him, and they had come over from Alabama. She lives over there on the other side of Birmingham, and she had actually, growing up, she was chased out of the woods, her and the neighbor kid and my brother there, and they didn't know what it was. But, of course, younger, we just thought, you know, they were kids. They got spooked by something, you know. But she can tell you details, you know. She remembers to that day what happened. And it's kind of funny because the neighbor kid, and, I mean, we lived on dead-end gravel road. But the neighbor kid, he lived way down at the front of the gravel road, and he would come down and play and stuff. And a couple of years ago, I asked him, I was like, do you remember, you know, encountering, you know, the times out there in the woods and stuff and be out playing and stuff? And he said, how could I forget that? He goes, I've never been back in the woods since then, you know. And
wow.
People don't, a lot of people, that's what I love about the conferences. Going to these, you know, you've got, like you were talking about, doctors and stuff, and they show up at these conferences and they talk to you and they can open up about it without the ridicule, without the, you know, being teased and stuff. And you can see the relief off of them whenever they are actually telling you about their encounter, their story. What,
well,
got them,
you know, that's one of the things about David's Museum down in Cherry Log. You know, when he first opened, I started working for him for a little bit because he really wanted somebody in there that knew what they were talking about. So people would come in, and they still do it to this day, and you could always tell when somebody came in and, you know, they wanted to pay their admission fee, but they'd be like, yeah, you know, you got a minute? And they wanted to tell you because they thought, all right, finally I can tell somebody, and they're going to listen to me about what happened. And that's when David started doing his whole maps about, you know, pinpointing where people say these things happened. Because, I guarantee you, he gets 10 to 12 reports a week. And they might not all be in that general area, but 10 to 12 reports a week on Bigfoot sightings.
That area is a hot spot. And
yes,
a lot of people
is.
Don't know
and, That is why I've stuck to North Georgia doing my expeditions. I mean, I can't tell you how many private ones I go on down there. And my BFRO ones, they're always full. You know, I have to turn people away sometimes because I'm like, that's too many. I can't do any more. I can't do any more people. It's too many for me to try to take care of.
And the one for North Georgia is sold out, correct?
The May one, I have one spot left. In October, I have Georgia. October, I'm still good on. And June is almost sold out, too. I actually have three.
No, where is the one in June going to be at?
All I can tell you is North Georgia. North Georgia in a hot spot. But it is it will be a true primitive camping experience. It is not something with restrooms or powers or anything like that.
Okay, but
it is truly primitive. I'm being selective on the people who can go on that, simply because I go as a leader. I don't go to babysit.
Right. Right.
You know, and there are campers. And then there are truly people who camp and, you know, they get it. They understand you dig a latrine or whatever. You don't have a lot of those out there. And you have to be selective.
Right. So
that one I usually don't do, like, that one I usually wouldn't do, like, presentations and stuff. That
right.
one really would be mostly about research. On my other ones, I do presentations. I mean, I'll take a big screen out there and we'll do a whole series on the Nephilim or like you said, Eyeshine, or like I've had Sybilla Irwin come before and give me her whole thing on the ones that she's drawn from reports. We'll have footprint casting sessions to where everybody can learn how to cast a footprint. I like to do a lot. I want it to be, if you come on one of my expeditions, I want it to be a learning experience, not only a networking experience for you to meet other people and share information, but I want you to learn something.
See, I need to get John out in the woods and where he's just out there without no computer or anything, and he's got to sleep on the ground for about a week with me, about 20 miles deep into the forest.
with a pup tail, right?
Yep.
Well, I might be very willing to do that. You just watch. You just watch.
You know, if you have the right amount of bug spray, it's all good.
No, we're going to do it the old-fashioned way. No bug spray, no nothing. He's just going to be, he'll be a changed man when he comes out of that woods after a week with me out there.
Yeah. Well, you better, Dr. John, you better read up on medicinal leaves and stuff that can take away bug bites.
I can do that. I can certainly do that.
That's like poison ivy. The anise grows next to it. There's so much stuff with the plants, and I'm a tracker. I can track animals. I know wildlife. But I'm doing a lot of research now on plants and stuff more in the area, and I've learned, you know, so much. But there, just with your plant and stuff that's out there, it's great because, you know, a lot of people didn't know, you know, poison ivy grows. There's usually, you know, the antidote that you can rub on there if you get the poison ivy oil on you that neutralizes it so you don't have a reaction. And it grows close to it, but you don't know what to look for if you, you know, nobody's ever shown you or anything. And
well, please show me because I can walk by the stuff and I have it. So.
Yeah,
I don't have to touch it. I just walk by it and it's like, oh, I'm itching.
Yep, but normally there's pretty, not too far. There's usually something that grows that will counteract with it. So, but yeah, I'll definitely do some more update and research on that and other plants and stuff. But definitely, this you're talking about how you do strictly research or whatever on the one in like June. So, is that a BFRO?
BFRO, and if someone's interested, they can go to BFRO.net and follow the protocol and send in an email, and then that puts them in touch with me, and then I talk to them and interview them. That one is a, you know, I'm limiting that one to 15 people, you know, and 15 people may sound like a lot to you, but it's a big research area, and easily you can split up into multiple groups.
Well, see, if I'm doing research, that's like, if I'm doing serious research, that's like 12 or 13 people too many. But
well, that's why I do a lot of private things as well.
Right. Now, are all your BFRO expeditions, do you strictly stick to your area like North Georgia and Southern Tennessee?
Well, if you go to another place, you know, you really kind of have to ask the investigators there. You don't want to trample on their area. I am tentatively planning one in Alabama in December. I've been researching down there, and I think we found a spot that we've got activity. We actually did a couple of casts there in February, but I couldn't get in an expedition anytime in the summer. You know, frankly, I don't love summer time for expeditions because I don't like snakes and I don't like poison oak and poison ivy. So, you know, there you go. But no, I am planning one in Alabama. If I can get it on the books, it'll probably be like the second weekend of December. Maybe somebody will get a good Christmas present early.
It'd be a heck of a Christmas present, Lori.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
Now, you said that you, you, if you want to, you know, you sell and you make these little tours and stuff like that. Could you tell us
you
more about that?
You saw it, Matthew.
You
know, isn't it cute? Aren't those little Bigfoot hominids cute?
Yeah. My niece has got that one, and she thanks you. She loves it. She loves it.
Yeah. Because to me, it doesn't look like a cartoon character. It looks more realistic than most of the stuffed Bigfoots that you get out there.
And that's a lot of people think that you get into this stuff for money or something. It you got to have money to research. We've got to do something. You're just rich. You've got to have money to research. You know, if you're taking a week off from work, that's a week's pay that you're missing out. to go and do this.
Absolutely.
And gas and all this
and,
other
and
stuff.
And it's not about the money. I've never made money on my expeditions. Now, you pay the BFRO a fee.
Right.
But by the time I pay for my permit and my insurance, and by the time I buy the food, I can promise you I'm in the red every time. So it's not about the money. For me, it's about getting people educated that want to be educated. If they want to learn about it, I will give them every resource that I have to educate them and let them go out and do their own research. Because we all know there's a ton of people in the woods doing this now because going Bigfooting is cool right now. I mean, and you know it. But that doesn't mean they know what they're doing. They don't know what to look for. And there's probably, you know, how many times have you been in the woods and heard a howl or something and think, oh, that was awful human sounding. There's somebody else out here. You know I have.
See, that's a good thing about my area. There's not a lot of researchers around. I don't care to go into somebody else's area, like certain, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, if there's a sighting, they say, oh, so-and-so is investigating it or something. But if I think there's more to it, for personal reasons, I may check into it. Of course, I don't make it public because, for me, it's
right.
Personal. It's not, I'm not wanting to prove it to the world. I'm not wanting to prove it to anybody else. It's for my own research. I mean, I've got my own reason to be doing this. And it took me over, you know. Anytime I drive by woods, I'm always looking. Anytime I hear of a sighting or encounter, and if I can get to that area, I'm going to investigate it sooner or later. But I'm the guy behind the scenes, the FBI, you know, the guy that goes and I treat every encounter area as, like I said, like a crime scene.
I understand.
And a lot of these people are like, oh, that's my territory. You don't need to be in, you know. They're not even going to know I've been out in, like, this area if I'm looking for something. There's certain things that I look for, and I do. I mean, I don't want to mess up anybody's investigation, though. I'd never do anything like that, you know. So I know these people are researching that area, and they got stuff set up, whatever. I won't go in there because it's going to mess up everything that they're doing. I have respect for people like that. But I also know if there's a good case somewhere and people need some answers, you know, then I'm definitely
absolutely. And you never know what one person's going to miss or the next person's going to find.
Exactly. I pay attention to detail. That's one of the things that people like about me. Like if I go out in the woods and I've got like a sixth sense too, and I pay attention to detail, everything about the area. I can feel, you know, you can feel the energy of a presence, something near. Like I said, it took over my life, you know, this whole research. I've took wildlife conservation courses. I learned how to track. I can track anything out in the woods. You know, people send me, they're like, we hear this out in the woods, and what's this and this, and they'll send me recordings, and usually I can identify it pretty quick and respond back to them. But I take everything, you know, like I said, as a crime scene. So I might be a little bit boring unless I'm just doing it for entertainment. You know, if people are wanting to go out and get entertained and learn, then, you know, I can be entertaining, I guess. But if you're out there for true research, I'm going to be pretty boring because I'm going to be paying attention to every little detail, concentrating, you know. So whenever I'm usually pretty quiet in the woods, you know, I don't make a lot of noise, but a Bigfoot will know.
We just have to be on different trails, okay? You have to be on one trail, and I'll be on the other side of the forest on another trail, because they'd be like, she's talking again, okay? She's talking again. Yep, she is.
See, I like to take other people's approaches, too. Because I've got my way, and that's a whole part of keeping open mind, learning. I mean, you know, if you're with somebody else, you know, you that's just a part of coexisting. You've got to have patience and understanding that other people are different. So maybe their way is more effective than yours, or it helps in certain situations, you know. It's just keeping an open mind, and I love to learn different ways, everything. You know, I'm open to everything. So I definitely, you know, I don't care if I'm out with somebody. I know what I'm usually getting into before I do it. If these people like to do this and that on their research, and, you know, I'm prepared for it. So it's no big deal. No big deal at all.
You know what? I got to say, this has been a lot of fun, Lori. We've only got just a few minutes left, and I wanted to say thank you so much for being with us. Would you come back soon? We had fun.
Absolutely. This has been fun. And I look forward to seeing you both this weekend.
Yeah, we're going to have a great time. And so what we normally do about this time is we let everybody get out their shameless plugs so they can help promote what they're doing. So ladies first, Lori, what would you like to plug?
Well, I'll plug Bigfoot in Me. It's an Etsy site that I have that sells Bigfoot paraphernalia, and I'll be at your event this weekend. And
great.
Then, of course, I'll plug BFRO. And you know, every organization has its pros and cons. And BFRO is a leader in research and your database information. You know, if people want to learn more about areas, go on there and read all the reports that have been filed.
That's great. And we appreciate what BFRO has done. You've collected data and you've made it available. And that's what it's all about, other than going out in the woods. So, you know, it's a double pronged thing. And we want to thank you and thank your colleagues and associates at BFRO that keep it alive and well and going. And so thank you so much. And now, Matt.
Thank you
for
having me. I really appreciate it.
You are welcome. We're glad to have you anytime. Matt, what you got to plug?
I'm Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization. Not affiliated with anybody. Just own private group. Welcome to everyone. Any type of stories or anything, find me on Facebook. Matthew Dell for Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization, or MECRO. Looking forward to Georgia Bigfoot Conference this weekend, people. Come out and, well, if you've got a ticket, then come on out, and looking forward to seeing you if you're going to be there. And if you missed out this time, then definitely get in on the next one that we have coming up. Get on early, because a lot of people love Bigfoot.
They sure do, and I think they're going to keep loving Bigfoot. So thanks a lot. And I would like to say, yes, of course, two things to plug: Georgia Bigfoot Conference this coming weekend. Three things to plug. We've got Georgia Bigfoot Conference coming up this Thursday night. We have Angelia Shear on Scarycast, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. And next week on Bigfoot and Company, we're going to have another, Matt, is it okay? We got another Tuesday deal. Because we got to kind of work around somebody's work schedule. Our guest is going to be Eugene Yost, Squatchman's son.
All right.
He's a good guy. And
he's a cool guy.
He is. He's great. We're working on a little thing, trying to see if we can make it happen. So he's going to come on and talk to us about that. So just look forward to having him. And I would also like to thank the female ghost that came into my place with the perfume that is not one I've ever smelled. And so as we were about two-thirds away through the show, I smelled some really nice perfume, and it was absolutely nothing in my place. So whoever you are, thank you very much. Glad to have you. And it was like right in front of the smell was right in front of me. It was very pleasant. I don't know what it is. It's like an older kind of perfume. So whoever you were, thank you very much. Again, Lori, thanks a lot. It's great. Look forward to meeting you this weekend. And will you be with us Friday?
I will be with you Friday night, yes.
Well, great. Well, I'll tell you what, if you'd like, I think you'll be the only BFRO member there. So if you'd like to have a table at the VIP thing that we're having, we'd love to let you have one. How's that?
Sounds great. Sounds great.
So just be there about 5:30 and grab your table and have a good time and bring some of your crafts, and some people might buy some. So love to have you. So both
all right,
both
we'll
friends,
see you
new friend and old. Thanks a lot, Dr. John, and we'll see you next week right here on
Thank
Bigfoot
you.
And Company. Bye bye. Goodbye, Matt. Bye-bye. See you this weekend.
I'll
bye,
see you
guys.
Bye, guys.
Yeah.